Hello and welcome once again to the Wrestling Arena. I'm your host, Paul Barrow, and on today's show, well, it's going to be a little bit, if you've been listening to the podcast feed, there may be a little bit of repetition with some addition, because I made quite a big mistake in that I was so convinced that the show tonight was happening last night that I forgot I was going out somewhere last night. I'd already promised I was going to be somewhere. So I very quickly put together a small amount of predictions, put it out on the podcast feed, had trouble editing that because I realised I wasn't using the right editing software. So that was a nightmare, but I managed to get it out. I was quite proud of myself, and only to be told when I got to the place where we were going, like, Revolution's not till tomorrow, dude. So I'm going to be going into more detail, because while I did give my views, I do think that it'll be much more interesting to talk about with people in the chat. We've currently got Mr. Priceless in the chat. Hello there, sir. How are you? Nice to see you here. And basically, I've got others to talk about. I've got news. I've got finally got my review of the Iron Claw, which I saw a couple of weeks back, but just haven't been asked to talk about. It completely slipped my mind last week when I was talking about Elimination Chamber, but I will definitely be giving my review on that movie. But first of all, I just want to say thank you for joining me. It's going to be a good show. Hopefully they all are, but I'm going to do my best to make sure that I pulled the Gunther, Mr. Priceless. I said on Sunday night when really it was, yeah, I just said I thought the wrong day. What's weird is I talked about doing two shows when I was in the chat room for the Ministry of Horror, Tez's horror themed show, and nobody called me out on it. Nobody said, like, Revolution's on the wrong day. You don't need to do a prediction show on Saturday because it's not until Sunday. So I don't think I was the only one in the moment to make that mistake, but I somehow convinced myself, which I guess I'd imagine that's the first time in show history that's happened. I've not particularly, to be fair, I think that's the first time I've ever happened to myself. You are watching a guy who has forgotten it's his own birthday a few times when he was younger as well. I think I was about 8. And I went downstairs and got wished happy birthday. I was like, oh, yeah. So, like, it's not, like, a bad passage of time is not something that usually, you know, is totally new for me. It's just I don't usually mix up what days I did not see the pre-show, Mr. Priceless, so I did not watch the women's tag match. So I could not comment on that. But we shall endeavour to go on. Currently, I just want to say that, like, I cannot believe that I did it, because I was so proud of myself. I was trying to edit sound in my video editing software, which was increasingly frustrating. I usually use a piece of audio editing software specifically for that, and it just took me ages to put together this little piece of work. And it took me ages to realize I was using the wrong thing, because I've got used to obviously using the editing software for video, but I just thought that was really funny. Like, especially when I got there, and Dave, my co-host for Turner years, was like, I don't think that's till tomorrow. And I was like, no, it's tonight. It's tonight. And he was like, no, it's not until tomorrow. And I was like, no, I'm sure. It took him a while to convince me that it wasn't until till this evening. So if you've heard my predictions, I'm quite interested to see how they are. I don't remember what I predicted yesterday. I do not remember. I know I've had some matches be like, I'm not sure who's going to win this, and I've picked someone. And I'm quite interested to see if after 24 hours, do I sit there and go, yep, still that person. So if I listen to the same thing, then I guess we shall see whether or not I stick with my predictions, or, as per usual in the predictions game, do I usually change my mind at the last minute and cost myself a load of points, which is often something I do. But anyway, enough of my ranting about the fact that I apparently don't recognise the passage of time. So I'm here to talk a little news for you guys. I still need to get hold of the news stinger. I do apologise. Hi, Fran the Cannon. How are you? I did not know about matches being added to 0 Hour. That's interesting. Because, of course, AEW needs to pile in 34 matches in a single evening to burn out the crowd entirely. But, Hi, Fran. I know I'll just get to the news. So if you saw SmackDown... Hello, Eddie. How you doing? Hello, Fran and Mr. Prices. Okay, things are starting to cook in the chat room. John Woodmus, good to see you. Good to see you in the chat room. Okay. John Woodmus already cutting a Steinemats promo about John's Samoa Joe's percentage of winning at Sacrifice, aka Revolution. Good work there, sir. I'm good, Eddie Hickey. I'm good. I'm a little embarrassed about putting up a prediction show for a show I thought was happening last night, and now having to be like, oops, I guess things have changed. But that's just kind of the thing. So anyway, I'll get onto the news, which Mr. Price has already given us the this is the news thing, and I've totally talked all over it, so I do apologise. So, during SmackDown, there was a lot of blackouts and muting done during The Rock and Roman Reigns segments. These were due to Die Rocky Die chants and signs. There was also a Rock Shops at Balco sign taken away. Balco was a business involved in the sports steroid scandal. That's a difficult one to say. That is a very difficult one to say. Sports steroid scandal in the 2000s. So, yeah, people are starting to get a bit crazy with that. I do want to talk a little about that big segment on SmackDown. I thought the segment was very, very cool. I do happen to know that it went long. It's obvious that it went long. It lasted about half an hour of a two-hour show. That's quite a lot. When you are sitting there... and expecting a wrestling show and you get half an hour of The Rock talking. Now, I know people love The Rock. I know The Rock's one of the most popular professional wrestlers in all of history. He's a popular movie star. But I'm not sure if I went to SmackDown and a quarter of the show was a single interview segment, I'm not sure I'd be too happy with it, no matter how good it was. Because, don't get me wrong, The Rock was perfect on the microphone. His timing was there. He's obviously really loving being a heel. It's like having the old Rock back. It's like having... I don't want to say the Rock from, like, corporate Rock era. But he's certainly better than he is as a smiling baby face who's trying to get fans the chance. Stuff like Cookie Puss and things like that. And, you know, Fruity Pebbles. Or I much prefer heel Rock. And I think he actually is preferring to do this. Mr. Priceless, Dwayne's got a Dwayne. Who is going to stop him? There is that. He's now on the board at WWE. So no one's going to be like, well, cut The Rock's time. That's what he's doing. And it worked. It was good. It was a really good segment. There was lots of interplay. There was a lot of crowd work. It was 30 minutes long. That's too long for any segment. I mean, I know the Bloodline have long segments usually anyway, but when you add the long entrances and all that kind of thing, and it costs some people some TV time at SmackDown. I know, for example, that Naomi's entrance was supposed to be on the show, and that got done during a commercial break because they were so behind. And it's like, yes, that's just somebody else's entrance. But it always reminds me of the WrestleMania 10 ladder match between Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels. They had an epic match. One of the best Mania matches ever for, like, pretty much rescued that show, to be honest. That show was not an amazing WrestleMania, but it did have that ladder match and the Bret Owen match. To be fair, there were two amazing matches on that show. But then you had stuff like Macho Man versus Crush, and there was supposed to be a 6-man tag, but that had to be, they were waiting backstage to begin that 6-man tag, and Razor and Shawn just went over time. They just would not finish the match, to the point where that match got cut. They weren't allowed to go out on WrestleMania. Shawn got chewed out by Macho Man Randy Savage for being selfish. But then you look at it and go, okay, it was selfish, but as Eddie Hickey says, it's an absolute classic match. So what do you do? Do you go, this segment is great and the crowd are with it, let's keep it going? Or do you go, we've got to get our point across, we've got, you know, get the point across and get out? I feel for the other wrestlers, the other performers, because as we said, The Rock's on the board, no one's going to stop him. But the thing is, he's not going to be a character on TV. I can't imagine he's going to be a character on TV for ages and ages and ages. It's just not how it's going to work. He's going to go on and go back and do movies. He's going to, and that's the thing. It's just kind of like, you need to get out of the way and let people that are going to be on the show be on the show, because you need to get them over. Your presence means that more people will watch the show. So let them get used to, let them get used to the people. Let them get used to the new people that they might not have seen before. And Eddie, you are right. It is entertainment, and it was an entertaining segment. I'm not saying the segment was bad, but it could have. They did a ad break after Roman's entrance. They know that Roman's entrance is long. That's kind of the point. But if you know the segment is going to go that long, just have the show open with him in the ring. Because the crowd are going to be all over it. If he's just stood there, you can fade up, and you can open with The Rock's entrance. But you know, these things do happen. I don't know if it was like malicious. It just felt a little, I want some wrestling on this wrestling program, please. I don't want to bring up the ghost of 2000 WCW, where it'd be a 2-hour show with 10 minutes of wrestling in it. But it's that kind of thing. You've got to be careful of that. It went over by about 10 minutes, apparently. So it was already scheduled to be a 20-minute segment. That should be enough time for you to do anything. Eddie Hickey saying he hates how long Roman's entrance is, but he hates Seth's entrance more, but it's got to go on. I'm not a fan of Seth's entrance, because I don't like the crowd interaction. Obviously, it's cool to have crowd interaction. I just don't think it's very cool. But, you know, they did set up the tag match for, the rumoured tag match for night one of Mania. I can't imagine that Cody Rhodes is going to turn that down. If they win the tag match at the night one at WrestleMania, the Bloodline are banned from night two. So I think, well, I guess we'll wait and see where that pans out, because there's two ways you can go with that. You can have them lose the night one and then have Cody overcome everyone, or you can make it a more fair fight by ensuring that the Bloodline aren't involved. Yes, Naomi's entrance got cut, and I think about 5 minutes of her match got cut down. And she's, you know, considering the whole Bloodline thing is about family, she is part of that family, and it's like, no, well, that's a good point for Andy Cannon. But it's a pretty interesting. I don't know about the Kabuki Warriors. I don't know everything that got cut. It's just a really weird thing to happen. Because, as I said, the segment was great, but it could have been 10 minutes shorter. Although, I suppose when you're out there and you're feeling the crowd, you can't cut them off. You can't stop them chanting. You can't destroy the moment. So there is that. But considering I'm complaining about a segment going too long, I'm possibly talking too long about this segment. So I just want to move on to the fact that Sting descending from the rafters for the final, likely time, at this past week's AEW Dynamite. The drop from the ceiling was the first time Sting had done a rafter drop since his 2007 entrance at TNA Slammiversary. Outside of that, he'd not done one since 2000 WCW and had used the entrance sparingly since the unfortunate passing of Owen Hart in May 1999. Sting utilising the entrance led some to reference the dangers associated with the entrance and perceived insensitivities. However, we're told, this is from Fightful Select, that AEW and Tony Khan actually called Martha Hart in preparing the spot to confer with her. Martha ended up giving her blessing, which is why the entrance happened. I think it's cool to see Sting do that. I'm not sure it was needed. You know, it's not the fastest drop, and it shouldn't be after what happened with Owen Hart, don't get me wrong. But it's always going to be cool to see him do that. There's got to be some kind of special entrance tonight. There has to be for Sting's final match. I'm not sure what it'll be. I'm sure there'll be a Darby Allin video intro, like you usually get those black and white intros for them. But to see him descend one more time was pretty cool. So, next piece of news, again from Fightful Select. AEW is landing a huge free agent in Kazuchika Okada. Okada's New Japan Pro Wrestling deal expired at the end of January, making him a free agent. AEW has long maintained interest in joining the company. By early February, Fightful Select had reported that Okada was expected to go to All Elite Wrestling and would be debuting once he'd finished up his freelance obligations with New Japan Pro Wrestling. We'd also noted that the first half of March was expected to be a huge one for AEW. Mercedes Moné is planned for the debut on March 13th. Will Ospreay is debuting as a full-time wrestler on Revolution, which is tonight. The company is poised for visual changes. They're on about changing the sets. And Sting's retirement is happening again tonight. In addition to that, we've been told the company has been hoping and at least tentatively planning for Kazuchika Okada to be in the fold by the March 6th episode of Dynamite. Tony Khan noted on a media call that there's something he's very excited about coming in Atlanta for next week's Dynamite. We've heard plenty of discussion that Okada might debut there, but I've heard from numerous sources that the hope of mid-February was for Okada to appear in the company by then. So it was already hoped that he'd already be here, but it's looking very much like next week. It was rumoured before. It was heavily rumoured, so I did report on it, but it's looking more and more certain. I'm not sure how I think Okada's great. Don't get me wrong. I think Mercedes Moné is going to be a shot in the arm for the women's division. I think that Will Ospreay is great. But it's not like they haven't had a great roster before and then gone, oh, they turn up every 3 months. So guess what? You know, Okada is going to be living in Japan. Ospreay is commuting from the UK. It's very weird to sort of be like trying to get hyped for a new signing again when every time they get a new signing, you see them for a bit and they just disappear. It's very, very strange. But it's they're loading up on talent, which is probably why they're possibly adding another pay-per-view. A recent AEW trademark has caused speculation as to what it could be about. Last week, Fightful reported that AEW filed a trademark claim for Dynasty. We'd since learned via Warner Bros. Discovery sources that the trademark is connected to a pay-per-view event or special show targeted for the spring. Word within All Elite Wrestling that we'd heard is that it could be an April event. AEW has never done an April pay-per-view in the company's history. As of now, no AEW events after April 3rd in Worcester are announced, all the way up to the company's Canadian tour kicking off May 1st. So it's just like, it's ridiculous. It's they've got this new talent, but as Mr. Priceless is saying, I expect quite a few people to leave. You know, Sean Spears came back on Tuesday for NXT. He's a Cody Rhodes guy. He just is. He's a Cody Rhodes guy. So It was I expected him to leave, especially when he wasn't really getting booked. And I expect Ricky Starks to disappear. He's a guy that was heavily influenced by Cody. I expect him to go and join the Fed because the Fed are going to be interested in him. He can talk. He's got a certain look. And I expect him to be gone because what have they done with him? They gave him the tag titles and then did very little with him. It's one of like I get what they're doing. I get they're trying to create new stars, but they've let some of the people they had that could have been stars. And I'm not the biggest fan of Spears. Like I think he's like pretty good. I think he's pretty good, but like to see him just go, oh no, I'll just leave. I think there's a lot of people in AEW that are waiting to go. I think Miro is just running the clock down. I think he wants to go back to the Fed. I think the Malakai Black is just looking to go back to WWE because his wife's there. Same as Buddy Murphy. I see him, and that's nothing on the, you know, that's up to those guys. If that's what they want to do, fine. But then if you get that impression, then you either need to use them to put people over. Eddie Hickey saying the Hardys. I'm not sure about the Hardys, like, because I don't know if they've got... They're not happy. They're not happy because they're not getting used. But I don't think they've got another run left in them. I think they're too... Especially for their style. They've never adapted that hot... Well, especially Jeff. Jeff's never adapted that high-flying, you know, jump onto a pile of chairs... Or onto a steel steps. He's never adapted that style. So like I'm getting on a bit now. I shouldn't really be doing this. And I just feel it's like watching Mick Foley. I loved Mick Foley. Mick Foley is like my favourite Attitude Era guy because of his great interviews and his willingness to just put his body through anything. But if you look at him now, it's just kind of like it's kind of, you know, he's paying the price for it. And Mick Foley was a big dude with like his back was wide, his hips were wide, so he's. His bumping is as bad as it was. His body type, and he even says this in his book, so I'm not trying to say the guy's like just fat or whatever. He says, like, I've got a perfectly big, flat backside. It's great for bumping. So, it's just like Jeff Hardy's not like that. Jeff Hardy's a slight build. And it's not like I'm against him like I am deathmatch wrestling. But to my mind, you should have adapted and stopped being, I'm going to jump off this ladder, I'm going to jump off this. People care about you now. You don't need to do that as much. Once people care, they just want to see you win. Or they want to see you lose. They're not going to... I don't want it to get to the point where you go, oh, Jeff Hardy's going to jump off stuff, isn't this cool? And then you go, oh, I didn't want to see that because it looks like he really hurt himself. Because that's where I got to with Mankind by the end. I was just, oh, no, Mick, stop it. Fran the Cannon saying, Matthews returns to WWE, Dom's days be numbered. You notice they haven't had Dom hanging around with Mommy so much lately. I don't know if that's because she was going to be such a big babyface in Perth that they were like, we need to not put him out there because you'll get booze because of Dom. But I thought it was interesting that he's just kind of not there. And then we've got Mr. Priceless. Talking about Gavin Spears, Sean Spears, his previous name. WWE doing surprises is the right way to go. Not AEW, bang, here's another guy, favour of the week or month. And I agree with Eddie Hickey as well, saying Dom can't be a babyface. But I think it's interesting they separated them for Perth because they knew that Rhea was obviously going to be the biggest babyface. So, yeah, we've got AEW... possibly adding another pay-per-view in April. It's a weird time for someone to add a pay-per-view. I would not be adding a pay-per-view around Mania. You've got other months. But I suppose if you add that pay-per-view and then add in all the Ring of Honor pay-per-views, you've probably got one a month or getting close to it. Not something I am a massive fan of because AEW pay-per-views used to feel a bit more special because you had time to build. I've never been a fan of the once-a-month pay-per-view. I mean, it's cool, I suppose, now, especially now you've got the network, but it always rotates through feuds very, very quickly. Now, in AEW, that's not such a big deal because it's not so storyline-based, as we'll get to with my preview of Revolution. But I don't think having massive amounts of pay-per-views is the way to go. Obviously, they make money. Otherwise, they wouldn't keep adding more. Fran the Cannon in the chat room saying she disagrees that Dom could easily be a babyface. It just needs him to repent and save Rhea at a vital point. I agree. I think that he's got past that sort of... People didn't like babyface Dom because he was not good in the ring. And he was not good in the ring and he had no personality. I think being a heel has taught him to have some personality. Whether he can transport that to being a babyface is another matter. But I think as soon as you save Rey Mysterio of all people, you'll be all right. Mr. Price is pointing out Supercard of Honor is on the Friday versus the SmackDown / Hall of Fame. Likely the only AEW involvement across the Mania weekend outside of the Indies. That does sound... Yeah, there is definitely... I think Supercard of Honor is that weekend. But it's just one of those, like... It's just... It's weird to put one in April, in my opinion. I will always associate April with Mania. Even though sometimes it's not in April. I just don't know what it is. I mean, it's close to my... Mania used to be, when I was younger, always close to my birthday. It would be a reason for me to get Sky Sports for that month to watch WrestleMania because I didn't always have Sky Sports back in the day. I didn't always get to watch the pay-per-views. But for WrestleMania, I'm born on April 4th. So I think WrestleMania 9 was on my birthday. So I got to watch the amazing sight of Hulk Hogan, you know, basically coming in and being like, nah, what's mine? But I was like, nine. I think I was 9. So I might have been 10. I think I was 10. So I was a Hogan mark at the time. So I popped, like, woke up my neighbours. It was quite funny. That was the first show I watched live. It's just one of those. I mean, Eddie Hickey talking about Dom still, saying he's still not good at wrestling. He's not great. But he's better than he was. He is better than he was because he stopped trying to do so much. Stopped trying to be Ray. Stopped trying to have that kind of speed in his matches. He's slowed down a lot because he's a heel. It's very, very interesting that they're going to do that. But April's a weird one, as I say. But yeah. But that's pretty much the news I've got because I don't want to... That's the news I've got so far. It's quite heavily weighted towards AEW because obviously they've had media calls and talks about all that kind of thing. So it's quite heavily weighted in AEW's favour at the moment. They're setting up Mania, so there's not really much news coming out because you know where it's going. I'm sure Mania week there'll be lots of stuff, and I'm surprised we still haven't heard who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. We're getting closer, and it's like, who's in the Hall of Fame, and why are they in the Hall of Fame? So, from there, the next thing I want to talk about is a little movie called The Iron Claw. Now, I obviously see that it's a wrestling movie. It's being produced by A24, and I was like, I saw the trailer for it as well. I've got to see this. It's a movie about the Von Erichs, and it was very... It's a weird trailer to see because the trailer was very hopeful. It was very almost joyous. Like me and my brothers, we love each other. It's the best. Yes, there will be spoilers. If I do not spoil this movie, then the review will go about two sentences. And I'll do this review here, and then I'll be moving on to the AEW Revolution portion of the show, which, as I said earlier, if you've listened to it on the podcast feed, I rather foolishly believed up until the fact I was out last night when Dave said to me, it's not until Sunday, and I'd rushed to get a prediction show out because I believed it was Saturday night, because I'm blaming WWE for changing their shows to all Saturdays. It's one of those interesting. I sped to get that prediction show up. I edited it in the wrong format. It was a nightmare. So yes, if you've heard it on the Fran the Cannon brings up an interesting point about this film. It's hard to spoil a film based on real life. She wasn't shocked that the Titanic sank either. This movie stars Zac Efron as good Lord, you think I'd remember the characters' names? Good Lord. Give me 1 second. Can't believe I'm going to have to do this. I actually... I can never remember. As Kevin Von Erich, I can never remember the specifics, if you know what I mean, of what happened. Like, I remember the specifics of the story, but it's like, who survived? You know what I mean? Because this is... Timestamp it on the on-demand version of things. I'll mention when all done. I'll mention the... Cool. I'll remember to do that. But this is a Zac Efron as Kevin Von Erich. And it's the tragic story of the Von Erich family. And I thought it was incredibly well done. I was very impressed with this film. As I said, the trailer to me was a little misleading. It was very much like, oh, me and my brothers, we love each other and we wrestle and it's a great life. And having seen documentaries about it and heard stories, then I was like, they're not showing a lot of what this movie is actually going to be about, because it's not a pretty tale. It's not a pretty tale. The thing that impressed me, it's about a family, a regional wrestling family. They ran world-class championship wrestling, which was the first, I believe it was the first wrestling company to get onto ESPN. They were the first to introduce multiple camera angles to shows. And I can't remember if it was them that brought in ring music. But for their time, they were very, very, very influential for their time. Stars Zac Efron, who transformed himself utterly for this film. It contains some of the most... It's weird to call a wrestling scene realistic, because obviously wrestling itself isn't realistic. If you're in a real fight, you don't throw someone to the ropes and have to come back. And then wrestling is a pre. We know what wrestling is. I'm not gonna go into that. But it's weird to say it's a realistic depiction of professional wrestling. Are they in 2K24? I do not think they are. I know that they're working on a legacy thing for the Rhodes family. I know that Dusty's in the extended version. I think Stardust is in the expanded version. And I think Superstar Billy Graham is in the expanded version. I do not believe they're in 2K24. There is a documentary on WWE Network called... I could be wrong. I have not been looking into 2K24 too much. I tend to take a few years off between 2K wrestling games because then you get to see a nice big change. You get to see a nice big change. So it's like getting FIFA every year. If you wait a few years, you feel more different than. So it is Rhodes, Billy Graham, and Stardust Day One. They may get added in. I think. I've got a sneaking suspicion the current Von Erich tag team may be involved in New Japan at some point. So, I can't see them being in 2K24. But there is a documentary called The Triumph and Tragedy of World Class Championship Wrestling on the network, which is well worth a watch. But this is a, obviously... obviously, this is a... It's a not fictionalised, but it's an altered version of what happens. Because what happens is they're a family, they're running a wrestling organisation, and the movie depicts their father, Fritz Von Erich, the owner of the company, the patriarch of the family, as quite the bully. He's never physically abusive, but he's very much pushy. He's very insistent that that the brothers go into this kind of thing and they do this, and nobody ever questions him. Nobody ever stands up to him and says, "I don't want to do that." So they all end up going into wrestling, and as the movie goes on, these brothers, which is Kevin Von Erich, Kerry Von Erich, Mike Von Erich. I'm missing. You'd think I'd remember. David. So there's quite a few. They all eventually either have tragic things happen to them, where they're slowly losing members of their family. And the most touching parts of this movie are the things where it's just the brothers hanging out. There's early scenes in the film where they sneak out of home. They've been told they can't go to a party, and they sneak out. And it's almost like it's romanticized. They're perfect people. They have their problems, and they do get to these problems. But at the start, it's just these brothers who love each other. They love wrestling, and it's sort of, you see the problems coming. It's a fall from grace in the most heart wrenching way. It's really, really, it's a great film that I really, really loved seeing, but I'm not sure I'll ever want to see it again. It really is just a gut punch after a gut punch after a gut punch. And the fact that Zac Efron didn't get some kind of nomination from something is honestly a bit of a shock for me, because this kind of film usually gets people, and it's done so well, and there are scenes in it where I shed a few tears. There were scenes in it when you know the story as well, that you if you knew the story, you know that certain of the brothers, things happen to them, or that you can see coming because it's in the film. There is only one real problem that I can see in this film, and it's their portrayal of Ric Flair. Everyone else is perfect. Jeremy Allen White has a tremendous look for Kerry Von Erich. The only problem is he's quite a lot shorter than Kerry Von Erich. There is an actor who plays Bruiser Brody, who, again, is just a little shorter. The guy that plays Flair, considering the tragic nature of this film, and it is a tragedy, the whole story is a tragedy, the guy that plays Flair is so... the characterization is so wrong. Or not even wrong, it's just off. Like, there is a Flair, they caught a very famous Flair interview in the film. And it's so uncanny valley that the guy doesn't look right, the guy doesn't sound right. And it's such a break that it's almost comedic, which is a shame because the rest of the film is so accurate in the ways of the wrestling looks like wrestling, the characters, the story. They have meshed somewhat with the story because the film is called The Iron Claw. I think it's been out here since early February. And it came out in the States in December, on December 22nd. We had to wait quite some time to get it in the UK. I do not want to tell everyone. I do not want to tell the story of the Von Erichs. I don't want to do that because I want you to go and see this movie. This movie is a great movie about a family that has wrestling as a backdrop, and as I said, it's a very good film. I'm glad I saw. I don't know if I'm going to see it again. It will stay with me for a very long time. It's very well done. It's very respectful. The real Kevin Von Erich, who was obviously consulted for this film, he said there's two things in this movie. One, my dad obviously wasn't like that. He wasn't like he said he was headstrong, but they needed a villain for the movie, so they upped just how manipulative. They said he said that my dad was he wasn't that bad, but they need a villain for the movie, and I understand that. And he said the only thing I cared about was that they showed how much me and my brothers loved each other, and they did that. And I've seen documentaries on the Von Erichs where he's told stories, and I've seen shoot interviews where he told stories, and there's quite a lot of those stories in the film. I get the impression that Kevin Van Erich was heavily involved in, use this story, and if you are triggered by people taking their own lives and things like that, this is probably not a movie for you to see. But that's really the only thing I'd say is, if you're a wrestling fan and you want to see a movie that takes wrestling and uses it to tell a story rather than just being to be fair, I like quite a lot of wrestling movies. I liked The Wrestler. Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler. But this is on another level because it's just such a... because it's a true story or based on a true story. As I say, the dude messed some things around to shorten the film. There was in real life there was another brother that is completely omitted from the movie because they said it was just too much. It was too much of a... they kind of intimated that if we had put the other brother in, people wouldn't have believed us because people thought the Von Erich family was cursed because just horrible things just kept happening to them. But yeah, this movie, I would give it I'd give this like a 9 out of 10. I think it's a really, really, really good film. Sean Durkin is the director and writer. I think he's done a tremendous job. I obviously don't want to spoil the film. If you don't know the story of the Von Erichs, as I said, the documents in the WWE Network. But if you want to see a really good dramatized version of that story, then I can't fault this movie. They definitely made changes. Dave and I, who I went to see this with my co-host for the Eternal Years, Dave, and we had a good laugh at the people on Internet Movie Database after the movie that were like, oh, the car park wasn't right. They didn't use pavement. It was all gravel. It's like, because that's the most important thing in the movie is to get the car park right. It was ridiculous. It's a very, very good movie. I highly recommend it. And think that it's got to be one of the top. It might even be the top movie with wrestling in it that I've seen. It's not so much a wrestling movie, but it uses wrestling so well to tell that story, that tragic story, and I think it's great. So, yeah, that was The Iron Claw. So, it might be coming to video on demand soon, because it's not like A24 are not a huge studio. They've started to become bigger and bigger. But it may be coming to video on demand reasonably soon. But I'll give it my highest recommendation as a film. Bring some tissues. So, that was my review of The Iron Claw. Move over, Tez. We have another film reviewer. Thanks, Eddie. I know I got to be... The problem is I don't want to tell the story. You know, you don't want to sit there and go, then this happens, then this happens, and then this happens. It's just one of those, like, it's so good that... that you don't want to... If you're a fan of a certain age, or you're around when a certain DVD came out, then the Von Erich story was everywhere, because it was so awful what happened to them. And this movie is such a good representation of that story that I just, like, I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't seen that movie, haven't seen the film, and don't know the story. So that is my review of The Iron Claw. And now we'll move on to my AEW Revolution preview. Now, I did put out, as I said, onto the podcast feed, my predictions. I am interested to see whether at 24 hours I've changed my mind, because there were many matches on this. I was like, I don't really know who's going to win this. So there might be a few where I've gone, oh, I'll change my mind on this. And I know that Fran the Cannon said there had been some more pre-show matches added, so I've got to look those up, because I don't know the pre-show matches. I do not know. Eddie Hickey saying, I don't think Ric Flair likes his lookalike in The Iron Claw. Once you see him, then you'll understand. He looks nothing like Flair. He sounds nothing like Flair, and it goes some way to nearly because I obviously know Ric Flair like the back of my hand, because I've seen the interview he gives that this guy is doing, and this guy doesn't sound like Flair. He doesn't look like Flair. He's wearing like a feathered robe, but it's like a bad, like, I could pull off a better Flair than the guy. And that's not slagging the guy off. The guy got hired to do this role. You know, there was a director there. They should have said, like, oh, this isn't working out quite well. But they didn't. He's in the movie. So I can't think of anyone who's been like, oh, that guy played Flair really well. Right. So I'm looking for matches on 0 Hour. So 0 Hour, from what I knew like yesterday, has Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale with Stokely Hathaway taking on the TBS champion Julia Hart and Sky Blue. Now, I like Stokely Hathaway. I've got no idea what he's doing with Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. This thing's been on Rampage, a show that I don't know anyone that watches it. And it's one of the storylines that they're going to put on Rampage and then try out on the pre-show. But Julia Hart, I think she's just come back from an injury. She's TBS champion, so that belt's been missing. I guess you want more women on the card, so this tag match is happening. I don't understand what's going on. And Mr. Price says, you're right, Stoke has been wasted since the firm went wayward. And he wasn't even used properly on Ring of Honor either. Because isn't he basically the guy, the general manager of Ring of Honor, if I remember correctly. But, like, they often have these kind of silly... I don't want to say silly. Silly storylines. And just trot them out onto zero and expect you to know what's going on. Oh, he's got a crush on Statlander, has begrudgingly befriended Willow because she's Stat's bestie. Okay, I can't say Statlander. I can always say Statlander, which I know is wrong. Okay, to me, Chris Statlander was the TBS champion, and she. You know, they waited a long time to put that belt on her. Now they've put her in a lot of stuff. I mean, I do like Stokely Hathaway, but he has a tendency to be a little goofy. Like, his storylines are... Nothing wrong with comedy and wrestling. But you had someone who was in total contention. You were trying to take the title seriously. And now two people are kind of... involved with, I mean, I've got like Stokely Hathaway's good, so I've got no, it's probably entertaining, but I'd rather they were like, let's take this a bit more seriously, especially when the belt hasn't been defended because of the injury. I think that we're going to get some miscommunication, and Julia Hart and Sky Blue are going to win this match. Now, what else is on the pre-show? Because that's the only one I've found. Give me a second, because... Ah, here we go. The Bang Bang Scissor Gang will compete in a 12-man tag team bout. Now, this is the first time I've seen this. So we've got Jeff Jarrett, Satnam Singh. We've got Team TNA, Private Party, and... let's have a look. Willie Mack. I thought that was Willie Mack. And they're against, obviously, the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. I don't understand why they put this group together, this super group, the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. They've made both acts less over. Like... I don't like the Bullet Club Gold being involved with baby faces. I don't think they make good baby faces. I guess Bullet Club Gold are a little silly, but it turns all of their stuff into silliness. Mr. Priceless. Did anyone learn the pointless lesson of the Hardy Andrade family office? Apparently not, because this is the kind of thing. This just reeks of, we need to get people on the card. And, you know, I don't know why Willie Mack is with Jeff Jarrett and the other lot. He, you know, it's just to get people on the card. Does it really matter who wins this? Keep in mind we've got both the ROH six man and the AEW six man tag titles, the Trios Championships. Willie Mack and Private Party. It is a 12-man tag team match. A 12-man tag team match on 0 hour. 12 people. That's too many. It's just going to devolve into... like, this match doesn't matter. Robert Dinkins, I wish Danhausen was on the pre-show. A singles match for Danhausen would be alright. Danhausen is entertaining. But chucking 12 people into a pre-show match when you've got to have all the videos you've got to have all the videos that are talking about the matches. You've got all these wrestlers. It's going to be like a Survivor Series match where somebody loses to a clothesline or the match gets thrown out in 30 seconds because of a mass brawl. I would pay to see R-Truth versus Danhausen, Eddie Hickey. That would be pretty funny. But yeah, that's a 12-man tag match. That's nuts. Why? You could have... oh, to be fair, I wouldn't want to see... maybe you wouldn't want to see another match on the actual card itself. But it just feels like, oh, we need to get these guys paid. Just put them on TV more. Don't just squeeze them into like interview segments and quick squashes. This could be a really decent collision match. To be fair, it might be a fun match anyway. But it just feels once again stuffing everything you can into it. But then again, it is the pre-show, so maybe you just want matches on there to kind of. It's a weird one. Like, I like everyone involved. I just don't like the Bang Bang Scissor Gang as a group. And this other group, like, what is Willie Mack doing in there? I thought maybe that was babyface. Does Willie Mack turn heel? I have no idea. Just feels a little shoved on there for the sake of getting people on. I mean, Jay White, when they signed Jay White, they were like, what a big deal. Used to be a New Japan Pro Wrestling champion. And now it's like, yeah, you're on the pre-show and you're part of a super group of, you know, people that like to scissor. And there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. They're over. But it can't be what he was looking for when he signed. Yeah, Robert Dinkins. I don't think William Mack should be a heel either, but he's looking like it, unless Jarrett turned babyface, which I don't know. I don't think so. Now, is there another one? Because I don't think so. I think we've got two of the pre-show, both of which are like, they'll be fine, but what are they doing? Why do they exist? I guess the women's tag matches... is going to keep something going. And the fact that both sets of Trios champions have just been kind of shoved on here reeks of, oops, people have complained they need something to do. But yeah, like, the pre-show will be fine. But when we get to the main card, we've got... this is in no particular order. FTR... versus the Blackpool Combat Club, which is Claudio Castagnoli and John Moxley. Now, because of what I think is going to happen in the main event, I'm picking FTR to win this. I think FTR are a good team. They're probably the best team that AEW have got. I'm aware they've been tag champions before. I'm aware they've been every kind of tag champion. But the Blackpool Combat Club, do you really want to make them a pair of tag team champions when you quite like to chuck them into singles matches whenever you like? You need to, like, you break them up when you want, you put them back together if you want. I've got FTR for the tag match. I think it might steal the show. It's one of like two or three matches that I think will attempt to steal the show. This next match used to be a part of it used to be called, was supposed to be a Meat Mayhem match, which I imagine was just the big guys. Unfortunately, they were going to add to the Meat Mayhem match of Wardlow, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Lance Archer. They were going to add Keith Lee, who's out because of bad knees, and Miro, who has been out since January. He said on Twitter, once that had been announced, we cancelled that match because we couldn't get Miro back in. And Miro was like, I've been injured since January and I've been telling the company that. You'd think they'd know that. So Miro's already expressing his displeasure, which is never a good look to get your talent to be like, oh, I'm going to complain on Twitter. But to... So we've got, in this match, we've got Wardlow, Powerhouse Hobbs. This is a scramble for an eight-man scramble for a future AEW World Championship match. We've got Wardlow versus Powerhouse Hobbs versus Lance Archer versus Hook versus Brian Cage versus Magnus versus Dante Martin versus Chris Jericho. Now, let me make this abundantly clear. Magnus only got on as of last night on Rampage. I don't think I've seen... if I've seen Magnus, I've forgotten Magnus. I've obviously seen everyone else. But one of these names is not like the others. Chris Jericho is miles ahead on the card of everyone else here. Miles ahead. It seems almost ridiculous to make this an AEW World Championship, you know, winner gets that, because it's like, I wonder, you know, Jericho hasn't won on pay-per-view for a bit, and now he's the only person I can realistically see taking the scramble match, because that would mean that it's a reliable name, a name that people know to go for the world title. Eddie Hickey, top AEW star, is Jericho. I might disagree. It certainly shouldn't be by this point, because he was the top star when they came in. Yeah, Mr. Priceless, CMLL's Magnus, has also done some stuff during New Japan Pro Wrestling during their Fantastic Mania, if I'm not mistaken. Not Nick Aldis, the other Magnus. When I first saw Magnus, I was like, wait, Magnus is like the guy running SmackDown. So... Fran the Cannon saying they have been taking Wardlow in the direction of a title shot. That is true. I mean, they could, if Wardlow wins this, what are they going to do? They're going to run back Warjo. I don't know about that. I'm not sure. Are you going to sell a pay-per-view on, you know, Warjo? I think he needs a bit more work than squashing jobbers and looking at himself on the screen. Mr. Process. Oh, bloody Warjo. See, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Undisputed Kingdom have said they want all the titles, and I do think they're going to get one tonight. Eddie Hickey, speaking of Nick Aldis, did you know he was on Gladiators? Yes, he was called... it was on the latest OSW review. They did a small piece, didn't they? I think. What was his name? It was something less cool than Oblivion. Oblivion's pretty cool. Yeah, because they made a joke like if he'd been waiting a few more years, he'd have been Skyrim. Nick Aldis is I still think he should be wrestling. I honestly do. I think he's good enough. I think he should have got at least a few matches in WWE before he had to put a suit on. But I guess you take the job they're going to give you. The big O, Oblivion. Okay, then. So, let's put it this way. I think it's going to be Jericho, but maybe they give it to Wardlow. I do think that this whole Undisputed Kingdom has been quite the failure through nobody's fault but bad timing, I guess. You've got, you know, Adam Cole, the leader of the group, injured. The guy they're feuding with, MJF, injured, which meant that Devil segment had to go on, I imagine, for longer than they intended. But now they just kind of look like geeks. To me, like, they're hardly the NWO. They're just sort of... Their stated goal is to get all the titles. So maybe you guys may have talked me around. Because I was definite on Jericho yesterday. But they could give it to Wardlow. But I really don't want to see Wardlow versus Joe. I really don't. But a match I do want to see, despite the fact that I think I know who's going to win. It's Christian Cage versus Daniel Garcia. I don't know about anybody else, but is Christian Cage's shtick getting a little old? Like, oh, yeah, you've mentioned someone's dead dad. Like, yeah, it was shocking, and it was like, oh, I can't believe you said that, like, the first 2-3 times you said it. But it's like, yeah, all right, fine. People are popping for it now. You're not supposed to be a babyface. I want Daniel Garcia to win. I think he deserves to win. I think he deserves another belt. I think his star has considerably, not dimmed, but they've had to start it again. They've had to, like, he was, like, close to being pushed up that card when he was doing the whole, like, am I going to join the Blackpool Combat Club or am I staying with the Jericho faction? And it felt like they were making him join the Combat Club, and he just went back to Jericho, and I think that stalled it for him. And this whole dance thing he's got going on, does the dance. I can't do the dance. you know, this whole it's getting him over. But do they pull the trigger now when Christian Cage has a ready-made person to beat him for that belt in Adam Copeland? And don't be wrong, Christian Cage is still good. He's still good in the microphone. It's just the whole dad thing is like, yeah, cool, got it, yeah. You know, he can still talk, but I foresee, you know, some interference so that Garcia loses. Unfortunately, I think he should win, but I think Christian's being kept with that belt until Copeland takes it off him. Mr. Priceless, talking of the egg, well, we have a Attitude Era podcast listener. You want me to dance all night? I don't think so. This chair's too squeaky for that anyway. The kill switch turn, I can't see it being tonight. It's got to be to help Edge, to help Adam Copeland, the egg. I think that's how it happens. I think that's, you know, it's got to be, this is the last straw, and then Copeland gets the victory and the TNT Championship, and then all of his open challenges become for the TNT Championship, like Cody's run. Robert Dinkins, will Okada appear tonight? I think he's being saved for the 6th. I think he's being saved for a Dynamite appearance. Tony's already talked about something cool happening on the 6th. During the news segment, we did say that Okada's signed. So, and I think he's being saved for the 6th. I hope, the problem is, as soon as Killswitch turns babyface, he's going to turn back into Luchasaurus, and I hate that name. I think it's so dumb. So I'm hoping it's not tonight. I think we've got another couple of months of Christian weaseling his way out of things. The problem with that is, in the next match, I also think we're going to get a screw finish in Konosuke Takeshita versus Will Ospreay. Now, this match is being supposedly put on for the fans by the Don Callis family. Right? One, why Don Callis hates everyone, and everyone hates Don Callis. This is, I think, designed to make sure that people view Will Ospreay as a total babyface. Like a total, total babyface. Because he's going to be cheered anyway. That's just, you know, the crowd are with Will Ospreay no matter what. So you can't have him stay with Don Callis. So I foresee some interference in this match as well. I think this is probably going to be the match of the night. Unless FTR and Blackpool Combat Club go for it. But I can see this getting some time. This is obviously Will Ospreay's first match as a full-time member of the AEW roster. Should be very cool. I'm looking forward to it. fan of Will's. He's one of the guys that do a lot of flippy stuff that I'm kind of into, because I remember him when I used to watch the British scene some years back when he was first starting off, and that's all he did. And I remember saying to my friends at the time, he needs to start incorporating some wrestling into that. Like, things need to start ending in wrestling moves, because sooner or later he's got to pack on muscle, or he's going to get old, and he won't be able to perform. And he's done exactly that. He's made it so all of his flippy moves end in wrestling stuff, because it used to just be, I mean, it was breathtaking, don't get me wrong, and I loved it, but I think he's done a superb job of adapting to, like, I'm getting older, I'm getting bigger. You know, he had to get bigger to compete in Japan at a certain level, and he was very smart about it. But this is going to be a great match with probably a screwy ending, so I hope they split that and the Christian Cage match up. Mr. Priceless in the chat, backyard flippy Essex boy, he's come a heck of a long way, evolved tenfold over the 12 plus years of seeing him from a teen to the world-class star he is. I agree completely. Because, don't get me wrong, when I first saw him and he was just doing flippy stuff, it was incredible flippy stuff. I just thought that, you know, he's got to get some wrestling in there. And all of my friends at the time, all of them were like, what are you talking about? It's amazing. I'm like, yeah, it is. But sooner or later, he's going to get old and he won't be able to do all of that. So you need to make it so that you can evolve that into... AJ Styles did a good job of it, of changing from like a total flippy guy into, and now here's some wrestling. Does the Don Callis family turn on Will? Yep, sensing it. That was from Mr. Priceless, Fran the Cannon. As long as Ospreay takes Aussie Open out of the Don Callis family with him. I think Ospreay's going to be on his own. I honestly do. For one, Aussie Open aren't about at the moment, because Carl Fletcher can't get his visa sorted. And who's the big fella? And the big fella's hurt. I can't think of his name. Mark Davis. It's not Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews is a little guy. There we go. Yeah. I did get Mark Davis. Mark, yeah, he's still injured. So they can bring them back and pretend they were never part of the Don Callis family by the time they get back. I think this will be a great match, marred with a scurry ending. Another match I think is going to be really good. It's Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson. Obviously, I thought this was going to be really good because it contains the world's best wrestler, Bryan Danielson, and my favourite brawler, Eddie Kingston, for the AEW Continental Crown Championship. And if Danielson loses, he has to shake Kingston's hand. So, I think I predicted a Danielson victory, did I? On the podcast I put out yesterday, I did not remember about the handshake stipulation. I think Eddie's winning this. Those are Eddie's belts. Those are Eddie's belts. To be honest, I think once it's off him, I don't think enough people are going to care about them. So I think they're going to give you an Orange Cassidy style run of, this is the Kingston belt. This gets Kingston on TV. It's the Triple Crown. It's their version of the Triple Crown. And I think that Eddie Kingston's going to win. I think it's going to be a lot of disrespect, lots of chopping, lots of being put in painful holds, lots of defiance, lots of nearly passing out and then not passing out. I think it's going to be a really cool match. That is the second match though, I think. Well, that's the third match. So far, matches I think could steal the show are FTR versus the Blackpool Combat Club, Konosuke Takeshita versus Will Ospreay, and Bryan Danielson versus Eddie Kingston. That's so far. That's three matches. That's three matches so far. Then we've got Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong for the AEW International Championship. So, Orange Cassidy is the champion, Roderick Strong, Nick Strong, and all that. I think that Roderick Strong comes away with the belt because, as we stated earlier, the Undisputed Kingdom have said they want the belts. So this is a belt they can get, so they don't look like they've completely wasted their time. This is a belt they can take from this pay-per-view and say, look, we're getting there, and the whole plan is to get Wardlow the world title, and then he'll surrender it to Adam Cole, which is where Wardlow turns babyface, I imagine. But you need to establish that, yes, the plan is going ahead, we're going to get all the belts. So I see Orange Cassidy fighting valiantly and then being put away. Then, for the AEW Women's World Championship, we have Timeless Toni Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo. One of the better storylines they've put together in recent memory, actually. This is I do like the Timeless Toni Storm gimmick. I can foresee a time where it's going to become too much. Don't let it intrude in the matches. Don't keep going to black and white segments during a match. It needs to be, that's her insane character, and it does not infect the actual wrestling, because then you're going to end up with, you know, Sin Cara's wrestling, so the lights are blue, or Kane is wrestling, so the lights are red, or the Fiend is wrestling, so, and he's wrestling in the red Hell in the Cell, so you can't see anything. It needs to be used sparingly, so people don't get sick of it, and they shouldn't get sick of it. She's very, very entertaining on the microphone. You have to know when to rein it back in. The wrestling needs to be serious, to my mind. I don't know about anybody else, but to my mind, you've got to say, oh yeah, she's out of her mind, but when she gets in the ring, she's still the Women's World Champion, and I foresee her retaining. She's the most popular female gimmick. Deonna Purrazzo is a great wrestler. I hope she doesn't sort of fade into obscurity. I hope she keeps getting chances, keeps appearing on TV. But when you've got Timeless Toni Storm on one end and you've got Mercedes Moné coming in, that's the match you're building to. So I foresee Timeless Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo. I foresee Toni Storm keeping the belt. I think that's just the way it goes. I think it'll be good. If it's given enough time, it could be very, very good. It's just a matter of, do they give it time? Then, for the AEW World Championship, we have the champion, Samoa Joe, versus Hangman Adam Page, versus Swerve Strickland. What do I think should happen? I think Swerve Strickland needs to win this match. He is, naturally, he's evolved to be one of, if not the most over person in AEW. But at the same time, they do not like having short title reigns. So does Joe keep it so that he can go? This whole thing we've brought up with Wardlow has really thrown a spanner into my predictions, because now it's like, well, maybe Joe keeps it so they can do War Joe. I mean, I don't think War Joe's a great idea, but they could do that. Swerve should win. If they delay it, they're missing the opportunity to make him. And I'm not saying like, oh, they're burying him. They're not going to bury him. It's just, you need to strike certain times. You need to be like, do it now, or you've missed the boat. And when you do actually do it, it won't be as impactful as when you should have done it. So like, to me, I'll bring this up again. To me, Cody should have won last year at Mania. Just should have. They've done a very good job of creating hype for this, but I was way more hyped for last year's Mania main event. I was way more hyped. Now I'm just like, get it over with. It'll be good. It'll be a good match. It'll be a good tag match before that. But if they hold off on Swerve winning, it's a mistake. Robert Dinkins, Swerve wins or we riot. I think that's how a lot of the fan base are going to feel. I think that's precisely how a lot of the fan base are going to feel. It's all a question of whether they do. I mean, Hangman's turned heel. which is fine. I don't really like the character. Hangman's never felt right since he lost the world title. He got a bum deal on his world title run. He just never felt like he was the top guy, which is a shame because people were with him and now they're not with him as much. They're definitely with Swerve Strickland, and they respect Joe enough where if he won, I think they wouldn't go crazy, if you know what I mean. Mr. Price's prediction, Joe wins. Would love Swerve to get a chance, but it's too soon for Joe to lose. As for Paige, was it seem to be going a bit more heelish? This is it. Like, he's turned heel. He's unreasonable. Like, he shouldn't... It's once again a reformation of the Elite. And to be honest, I don't care. Like, the Elite are not the massive fan reaction they once were. They're just not. And we'll get to the Young Bucks in a moment. But I think the only thing that got me thinking Joe might lose, he's obviously the body double for Sweet Tooth on Twisted Metal, the TV show. And that season 2 has to be starting to film soon. So maybe he's got other commitments. That being said, AEW are the company that are flying people in from Japan and the UK. So maybe they're going to fly him in from the set to do this kind of thing. But the real, like, as much as that's the World Championship match, the real main event is this match for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. Sting and Darby Allin, the champions, versus Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, the Young Bucks. This is interesting. I think Sting's an old school guy who's going to want to go out on his back. I really do. It's a matter of whether or not the company will let him do that. I think if it's not the last match, then I think the Young Bucks win through again. Heel tactic. They've got to out heel him. It is a tornado tag match, so anything goes. So they can just do any old crazy stuff. Sting has basically said he's going to leave everything he's got out there, which is a bit worried about because he's already been doing some crazy stuff and this is the last time he's out there. You know, he could decide, I'm going to jump off something ridiculously high, or I'm going to do any old stuff, and I hope the entrance is cool. I hope he gets Metallica. I hope he gets everything he wants because he deserves it. You know, all those years in TNA, the frankly awful WWE run, why they ever beat him at that Mania, I'll never understand. The fact he never got Taker, he literally said that's the reason he signed with WWE, to get that match with Taker, that's never happened. And obviously, I can understand the WWE's point of view from him being injured at some point, but all I can think of is if the Young Bucks win, that sets up the tag team champions, the Young Bucks versus FTR. And that's completely, you know, that's probably a match they're going to return to forever. As I said, Sting's an old school guy. He might be like, I've got to lose. I don't want to go out as a champion. I want to go out making someone look more impressive. The Young Bucks heel characters, I get what they're going for. They're like, oh, we're EVPs, we're arrogant, we own like this, and we can fine you for that. The problem is, as babyfaces, they always came across as incredibly arrogant. So being incredibly arrogant and now having mustaches isn't doing it for me. I would have leaned more into the crybaby route, the whole I mean, they do talk about how, like, we made this company, blah, 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 what you're talking about. But what they should be like is, like, kids having a tantrum. It should be, we made this company. You wouldn't even be able to work here. It should be more whining. And it doesn't come across that way. It comes across like, oh, aren't we, we're sort of cool, aren't we? It's like, just do what, make it more, make yourselves more unlikable. Because, to be honest, the moustache thing, we all know what that's a dig at. That's a dig at Vince McMahon. I think they should have got rid of the moustaches the moment all the Vince stuff came out. Flipping, it's, I hope this is an awesome match. I hope Sting gets to do everything he's always wanted to do. I hope the crowd are insane. I hope we get a lot of people there that you wouldn't usually see. I know that Kevin Nash has said he can't go because of his contract WWE. And that's a shame because apparently him and Sting are quite close. But I'm wondering who else are we going to see there. I imagine we see, obviously we're going to get Flair's going to be there. I imagine DDP's going to be there. I'm wondering who else is just going to be sat in the crowd. I hope he gets everything because he deserves it so much. Just from a guy that when I was a young kid and I first saw him, it's really simple that I was like, that's an Ultimate Warrior ripoff. That's my immediate thought when I first saw Sting. They've got a guy who they're trying to be the Ultimate Warrior, and he's so much better than Warrior ever was. And I've never read of him being selfish when it comes to, like, oh, we need you to lose. The only thing I've ever read that he doesn't like being a heel, like, he, when they did the main event Mafia, he was like, I don't really want to be a heel. When they turned him heel in WCW, which was ridiculous, he didn't want to be a heel. And obviously we had some marital problems because he wasn't faithful on the road for a while, but he then found God, and obviously everyone deserves a second chance. But Robert Dinkins has to go. Hopefully enjoy Revolution. Nice to see you, Robert Dinkins. Hopefully we'll see you again soon. Mr. Priceless, I met Sting nearly 10 years ago at a Revolution Pro UK show. He was supposed to be originally Flair. Sting's a class act to the end. Yeah, this is the thing. I've been to shows. There was a company called World Wrestling All-Stars. And it was the national exhibition. It was the National Indoor Arena in Birmingham, or the National Exhibition Centre around Birmingham. I can't remember which one of the buildings it was. I think it was the NEC now, I come to think of it. But they delayed the show. And then when we went there, they'd sold very few tickets. So we got to move quite close to the ring. And to be honest, the show had quite a few stars from WCW. But the one of, you know, Sting was just on another level to these people. He's always been like the guy that's not WWE. Even when he was WWE, it was, you know, he just felt different. He put all those years in TNA, and yes, he got paid like a lot more money than anybody else. But he was the guy that was giving it legitimacy for quite some time, till Angle came in, and obviously Angle had his problems. You don't really hear of anyone having a go at Sting and being like, oh, Sting did this or Sting did that. Sting played politics backstage. I just hope he gets what he deserves. I think he's going to lose. But I'm not sure. If he wants to lose, he should lose. But I think the company will be like, no, we need to send these people home happy. They came to see you. So is it a loss followed by a beatdown? Oh, I suppose they'll just have Sting win, retire as champion, and then run a tournament for the time. What am I thinking? They'll just run a tournament. They always run bloody tournaments. So there is that. But uh,
You thought I was going to go into a man called Stink. He did this, he did that. He is as quick as a cat, but I'm not singing Man Called Stink. As cool as it is, and it is cool. It's no Mr. Bang Bang, but it is still cool. But Sting's one of my favourites. Hopefully, I know that Lawrence has been quite busy. I'm going to try and get in touch with him. Not trying to throw Lawrence under the bus here. I haven't contacted him before this because I keep seeing that he's touring with Don't Stop Believing, and my hope was to try and contact him before this event. But Simply Ravishing is great. That's one of my favourite like WCW songs from that era. Like you might be trying to sit the mic, but I love. Was it Slam Jam? Was that album called Slam Jam? I'm going to have to listen to that now. But yeah, Simply Ravishing was great. As was Rick Rude in WCW. Yeah, Lawrence is everywhere. And like, I don't want to. I don't want to be like, oh, can you come on and talk about one thing? I want to wait until we've got some time and we do a career retrospective. I haven't asked him, so this isn't me announcing anything. I'm not trying to force Lawrence into doing anything. If he doesn't have time, then he doesn't have time. But we all know what a huge Sting fan he is. I know this is going to be a very difficult match for him to watch. But I hope Lawrence gets what he wants. I hope he gets an amazing Sting performance. But I do think he's going to go out on his back and lose. Or if he wins, they're going to make him win and they'll just vacate the belts and then run a tournament, aren't they? Oh, yeah. Speaking of Ministry of Slam alumni, AJ Kirsch was on Raw this week. I missed it until somebody brought it up. Yeah, Sting's retirement is, he's the last of the 90s stars, really. Like the early, the guys that were on top in the early 90s, like in the 80s, the cartoon era, he's the last one of them still going. Like Austin wasn't really that era, and he's retired. The Rock wasn't really that era, and while he's back, he's not really back full time. It's very much a strange thing to think that, like, who else is that? Luger is obviously had his health problems. Flair's in the ring, but he's not wrestling, and like, thank God, because the last I paid for his last match and it was bad. It was very bad. He should not be wrestling. Like, I've got no doubt that Sting might turn up again to do some backstage stuff or, you know, announce a match or that kind of thing. But I can't think of anyone from that 80s era into the early 90s, the era that I kind of got into wrestling in, that is still going. There was a top guy. I can't think of anyone. RVD was like 96, 97. I'm talking about like 80, 89 to like 94. It's really the RVD was RVD, I suppose he was about, because he was Robbie V in WCW, but he was a job guy. Like, and he takes vast like amounts of time out. This is what I'm saying, Mr. Price. There's the 90s WCW main event scene. One of the last, if not the last main guy. I can't think of anyone from there, from WCW in that 90s era. I can't think of anyone from WWE in that 90s era. I'm not going into like the new gen era, because I think there might be like, even Taker's gone. He's the last one. He's the lone gunman. He's the last person standing. And he's still doing crazy stuff. It's mental. Heyman's still going, I'll give you that. But Heyman was never a guy taking huge bumps. I do love Heyman. Heyman's, you know, to me, the second or third best manager of all time. Booker T. Rookie Teeter still does stuff for his it's a Texas, I can't remember what his company's called, but he does his own school shows, doesn't he? Fair play. But again, he's not full-time. Heyman, as I say, Heyman's still going, but he was a manager. And again, he's had huge amounts of time out. I suppose Sting did when WCW closed down. But to me, it was like Sting, Warrior, Hogan, Flair. It was... There were parallels between the two companies. Jericho, to me, Jericho comes along later, because Jericho doesn't really turn up until the Monday Night Wars are going. Arn Anderson, Eddie Hickey. Arn Anderson's been retired for a long time. He had severe neck problems after, I think it was a roll-off from one of the Rockers. Basically, jacked his neck directly into the floor, into the mat. I've seen the clip and it's not pleasant. One of the best ever to do it, but he's been retired a long time. I'm not talking like not involved in wrestling. There were tons of people that were about that are still involved. It's not a pretty picture, that roll up. And it was nobody's fault. It was just one of those freak accidents. You could just see it. And he wrestled for years with basically a broken neck and just didn't know it was broken until he went. Because that was in WWE. And he was wrestling for WCW for years after that. But there are still people involved, don't get me wrong. I'm just talking about at that top level, at that massive star from that era. To me, you don't get it. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Priceless, you want to talk about Arn Anderson, he still pulls out one of the best spine busters ever. Like, these people can... I'm not talking about people that can come in and do a spot. I'm talking about... I can't think Hogan's not going, despite the fact he still keeps... He's still peddling on about he could do one last thing. It's like, you've got a battery in your back. Like, you can't do anything. You've got a pacemaker. You just can't. So stop it. But he's the last bastion of the 90s to me, the early 90s. Like, I'll give you Jericho. Jericho's been going since, like, 90... Jericho's been going since 90, but he never became a huge star until he got to WWF in, like, 99. Shelton Benjamin, again, that's, like, 2002. Brother, dude, Jack God, Hogan, brother. Hulk may not, but Terry could, dude. Yeah, but Terry's not the same guy, is he? I'm not repeating like that thing he tried to peddle in the lawsuit. Rey Mysterio, Rey. I might give you Rey. Rey's been going since, again, that's 95 though. Really, I suppose he was going in Mexico as Calibri for a while. Terry is terrible. Yes, and Hogan. Why did I bring Hogan up? But look at the difference. One company's top star, Terry Bollea, is in the Terry Bollea business. Sting, I've never heard of him being... I've heard of him, like, propose different things. Rey just come back. I suppose Rey has been active since 89. That is true. Okay, maybe Rey Mysterio is the last one standing. Oh, I'll just... Ooh. Okay, maybe Rey Mysterio's last guy standing. But to me, Rey Mysterio never had a company built around him. Certainly the division. Certainly the Cruiserweight division when he got to WCW. To me, though, Sting had the company around, was carrying a company for a while. I'd argue that Sting is a small step, but still a step above. I'm not arguing that Rey Mysterio is not amazing and hasn't had one hell of a career. I just think it's like, you know. But anyway, I'm not trying to, you know, say, oh, this person's not good enough. Eddie Hickey, we're talking about Sting, has never been WWE champion. Because we know Rey has, because that was a terrible reign. But yeah, he was just never in WWE that long enough. And I know they wanted him in the early 90s. They were trying to get him for years when he was in WCW. He just wouldn't go. And they tried to get him when WCW closed down. He wouldn't go. And then when he went, they basically treated him... No, Ray's been WWE champion and world champion. Ray was WWE champion for about four segments of one Raw. And then John Cena came out, and like the massive baby face he was, just beat Ray, playing for a belt that he just won in the tournament. It was bad. It was real bad. Ray's been world champion, and that was a terrible run, because it was literally like, oh, he's world champion, we're going to beat him, we're going to just have him feud with Mark Henry and people, massive. It was bad. Eddie Hickey, literally, Ray's been wrestling all the years of my existence. Debuted weeks before I turned up on this forsaken planet as Mr. Priceless. The world title won after the Rumble win and Eddie's passing, and I hated all of that. Did he deserve the world title? Yeah, he's a huge star. The way he got it was tasteless. Just tasteless. But yeah, I think that I'm not gonna pick a winner in that tag match. I only hope for that Sting gets to put on whatever he wants to put on. If he wants to take it easy and just pound his chest, because that crowd will go nuts for him, that's fine. If he wants to dive off something crazy, that's fine, as long as he's okay. I don't care what Sting does, as long as he gets that crowd going crazy for him, and they will. I don't think Sting, don't get me wrong, I don't think Sting will phone it in. But I wouldn't even have a problem if he did. He's done way more than I ever expected in this AEW run. He's done way more. So yeah, that is going to be my coverage, my second coverage of AEW Revolution. I think that it's Mr. Price. This won't be a clean finish because they've made it a tornado tag match. They've made it. It's going to be full of tables and all kinds of stuff. At least I believe it's a tornado tag match. Is it tornado tag? Have I read that wrong somewhere? I could have sworn it was tornado rules. Let's take a look, because that might change. That might change if it's that may change if. Fran the Cannon says it's a tornado tag, so. I foresee it being dives through tables, dives off balconies, baseball bats, all kinds of, you know, fun stuff to make Sting look as impressive as they can make him look. The more I think about it, the more Sting's winning, and they're just going to hold a tournament. I forgot that Tony loves a tournament. But yeah, I just hope he gets what he deserves, a good send-off. So, that is my preview of Revolution. I will be back next week with my review of Revolution, which I thought was happening tonight. And obviously I will talk about WrestleMania, and we'll be dead on the... we'll be on the road there. And we'll see how I did with the old predictions. I've been Paul Barrow. It's been a pleasure. And I will see you guys next time.